Episode 86 of Outlander Cast is brought to you by Love Pop. To enter the 2018 Love Pop Birthday Sweepstakes for a chance to win 50 3D birthday cards, visit lovepop.com/outlandercast. All the way from Cranston, Rhode Island, welcome to Outlander Cast. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Starz. Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I think I need to talk some Dougal McKenzie.
Amen.
A little bit. I've had a chance to go back and watch some Outlander and reflect, and I'm actually even starting to read the first book of Outlander now.
So you're getting to know Dougal quite well now that you are officially reading Outlander.
Right. Well, no, I'm only reading the first book.
Well, that's why.
That's
yes.
It. Okay, so let's just get that straight. Only the first book.
You will not be spoiled.
I will never compromise this podcast. But I've gotten a chance to get to know Dougal a little bit better here, and
yeah.
Over time, I've kind of grown very scared of Dougal.
Rightly so, my friend.
And I think he is a character that is, morally ambiguous, you know,
mm-hmm.
In the best case.
I thought you were going to say ambitious.
Ambitious is another one.
Yeah.
But I couldn't think of a better way to kind of celebrate this new love of Dougal McKenzie that I have than to organize a interview with one Graham McTavish, who, of course, plays Dougal McKenzie.
You know, not only is Dougal such an interesting and exciting and thrilling and fearful character,
yes,
in Outlander, but Graham McTavish is just such an awesome actor, but also awesome human being.
Very nice guy.
So nice and so fun, and has an amazing assortment of projects that he has worked on. And he's you know, a fan favorite for a reason.
He is what I the recipient of what I like to call the Benedict Cumberbatch effect.
Tell me.
You know, like one day, nobody knew Benedict Cumberbatch.
Okay.
Nobody knew him. And all of a sudden, the next day, household name.
Yes.
Graham McTavish, all of a sudden, he's in everything. Everywhere I look, he's in every movie.
Yeah.
He's in every television show.
Yes.
And rightfully so. The guy's amazing. And
I need to say something. I have seen so much of the work that he's done.
Yep.
And I didn't know it was the same person.
Right. Right.
And it is very rare that I can say that. Blake can call someone out right away.
For the most part.
But I'll never forget when people were like, oh yeah, he was in The Hobbit. And I was like, what? I've watched that movie a million times because I'm a Lord of the Rings nerd. What are you talking about? Granted, he had on a lot of makeup
and he was
additional.
A dwarf.
He was a dwarf. A lot of different things. But still, I mean, so many of the things that he's done. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited for you guys to hear this and to jump on it.
Yeah. And again, another entry into our amazing Gonlander series that we have on this show. I'm so proud of this series. I think it's great. So in the meantime, my darling, what do you say we get into this wonderful interview that we did?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Joining us today is Graham McTavish, a widely accomplished Scottish stage, voice, and film actor whose many credits include the likes of Lost, Rome, Prison Break, Preacher, 24, The Hobbit Trilogy, The Finest Hours, Creed, and way too many more to list. But we all know him as this strong, cunning, morally ambiguous, as Blake said, Jacobite war chief of Clan Mackenzie, Dougal McKenzie. Graham, thank you so much for taking the time out of your incredibly busy schedule to join us on Outlander Cast today.
No, not at all. Not at all. Glad to be able to be here.
How did you find out about Outlander, either the book or the show? What was your first way of hearing about this massive beast called Outlander?
I was doing The Hobbit in New Zealand, and I can remember it pretty clearly, actually. I was in my trailer in my my dwarf costume and makeup, and my manager rang me and said that there was a show that was going to be done that was set in the Highlands in the 18th century, Highlanders. Is this something that you'd be interested in? And I said, oh, yes, I would definitely be interested in that. I just imagined, I very clearly remember imagining what that experience would be like, being in Scotland again, being close to people I've grown up with and worked with as a theatre actor, experiencing the landscape, telling that kind of a story. And I have to say that the reality was very close indeed to that imagining. And so they contacted my manager. There'd been interest in me prior to that for another show that Stars produced called Black Sails. And they wanted, they were very keen on me being involved in that, but I was unavailable because of The Hobbit. And so I was sort of on their radar for other things. And then they set up a meeting with the director of the first two episodes, John Dahl, in London, with the producers. And I went in and I did what they call a chemistry read with Sam. you know, we instantly got on. We instantly liked each other. I instantly liked Sam, and I knew that an experience working with him would be really enjoyable. And so it came to pass. So it's, yeah, one of those strange things that begins in a trailer in New Zealand and ends up in wherever it ends up. Yeah.
What was that chemistry read like? I mean, for the layman, like idiots like me, like what exactly is a chemistry read? And do you remember, like the script that you read?
You basically take a couple of scenes and you play them out. You play them out with each other and you try them two or three different ways. And the scene that I think I'm pretty sure I did with Sam was after I'd exposed his flogging scars in the Rent episode, where we're going around raising money. And we had the big argument that we ended up having in the show over, I think it was around a campfire. It was just the two of us. And we did that. And we did that two or three times. And I think it was the scene with Kat where I get her to drink from the river to tell the truth. And I read that with the casting director in the room. She doubled for Kat because at that point, Katrina hadn't been cast. In fact, Katrina was pretty much, I think, the last person to be cast in the show. They were having a huge trouble finding the right person for the role, and they actually thought that they would have trouble finding the right person for the role of Jamie. That was the one that they thought they would have real trouble with, but they found him very, very quickly. So it just shows you.
Did you ever meet with Ron Moore prior to the during the chemistry reads? Was he part of it as well, or did he have notes for you or anything like that?
No, Ron wasn't there. Meryl was there. She was the producing element in the room, and it was all taped, of course. So in these days, you know, it's you often don't meet the people that are employing you until you walk onto the set. I had exactly the same experience with Preacher. When I went on tape for Preacher, then I had a video conference with Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, and I didn't meet them in person until I turned up on the first day of shooting.
Wow.
Peter Jackson with The Hobbit. I was actually in the hotel room. His wife and the other co-writer of The Hobbit, Philippa Boyens, were with me. We were doing the third meeting, the big third meeting, and Peter was ill, and he was in the bedroom of that hotel suite watching it remotely from there.
Wow.
So I didn't physically meet him until I arrived in New Zealand. But he was in the room, if that makes any sense. Very strange.
So, of course, you learn about Outlander in the midst of The Hobbit, and you get to hear about this, and you say, yes, that sounds amazing. Did you have any idea, though, how strongly people felt about the character of Dougal before you started filming?
No, I didn't. I mean, the only inkling that I got was after the announcement, the cast announcement that I was playing the part, and there was just this sort of bombardment of opinions and thoughts and, you know, whatever people were posting, and I found out that way. I hadn't read the book, and I read the book once I got the role. But no, I mean, I'm kind of ashamed to say I knew nothing about it. I knew the history. I knew the history of the period very well. So I was very familiar with the context that Diana was setting the story in. But I was completely overwhelmed and continue to be overwhelmed, actually, with the reaction to the show and to my character. I mean, pretty much, you know, on a daily basis, people talk to me about both of those things whenever I'm out. It's the kind of show, and he's the kind of character that really gets people going. Yeah, they get very passionate about the whole thing.
So with that in mind, I mean, you know, TV and movies, but I think largely television, I think it's filled with a bunch of characters who, for the most part, are either good or bad. But, you know, Dougal isn't necessarily either. So when it comes to this, does it make it easier or more difficult to play for you?
It's more interesting, definitely more interesting, mm-hmm. to play that complexity. I mean, when you're given a character, I mean, I think I was very lucky to have that role. He's such an interesting guy. You can literally go from sort of cheering for him and then sort of booing him in the same episode. He has that duality about him, but I think it's a duality that is very human. I mean, some of the circumstances that Dougal finds himself in are quite extreme by normal standards. But really that struggle between trying to do the right thing and giving in to your weaknesses and your vanity and whatever else may be going on are things that I think a lot of people can relate to. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, the problem with characters that are just good and just bad is I think that that's not realistic to my mind. The world isn't that straightforward. I mean, some people are better than others, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But they everyone struggles with things in their lives to a greater or lesser extent. Dougal just happens to be somebody who plays it out on a big canvas, you know, the canvas of that show, the canvas of that period of history, which is such a rich, you know, landscape to be a part of. So no, it was very interesting to play that. Yeah.
You talked about big canvases and Dougal certainly plays a hugely an Outlander and all those big canvases. But I would say that my favorite moment that you performed is the moment in Colm's death scene. And it was such a small scene. It was just you and Gary Lewis. And, you know, Dougal, the character, doesn't know that Colm is dead, but he tries to tell him all the things that he never could. Yeah. But I remember you did this thing where you, like, banged your head. And I felt like that was so real and authentic. What does that scene, when you look back on it, what does that scene mean to you, and how does that represent Dougal in your eyes?
Well, I think it was a great scene, beautifully written, really sensitive, I think, to the characters, both of the characters in that scene, to their relationship. It was the very last scene that Carrie and I both filmed. I'd already filmed my death scene. So this was my, you know, this was the last day. And so it was very poignant from that point of view. But from a performance point of view, I think what resonates for me, and I think probably resonates for a lot of people, is the things that remain unsaid when you lose someone in your life, the things that you wish you'd said to them, the things that you'd wish you'd taken time to communicate. And, you know, I've lost both my parents now, and there are things that especially with my father, you know, growing up with a sort of a working class, quite, you know, tough Glaswegian father who fought in the war and all that goes with that. You know, there are things that I wish I'd spoken to her about that I'm never going to get the chance to now. And that's what I was really kind of tapping into in that scene, was the terrible waste and the terrible regret that you feel when you don't get that opportunity, when that moment has passed. And sometimes it's not even death that prevents it. It's you lose touch, or, you know, there's a moment in a conversation where you think, I'm going to tell this person this now. I'm going to tell this thing that's important. And somehow the moment goes and it's gone and you can't quite get it back. And those sort of regrets that we have in our lives, I think, are something that hopefully we can all share in as humans, you know. And I think it was a very human scene for Dougal. Mm-hmm. He was stripped away of anything, you know, any of his ego or vanity, or it was very raw. And somehow what I was trying to do was really to expose the very the heart of him. Mm-hmm. I suppose. Yeah.
So did you have the conversations with the directors or the writers on how you wanted to play it? Did you ad-lib it at all?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we did it, as far as I can remember, we did it in three subtly different but important ways. We did it with a very, very restrained performance. And then we did it with a, you know, in one take, I mean, complete breakdown, you know, sobbing uncontrollably, that sort of thing. And then I think the one we went for was the third one, which really fell in between those two. And I think that was the right temperature for the scene, because you have to be, well, whatever your temptations are as an actor in those scenes, you know, oh, I want to be able to show people how well I can cry, or I want to be able to do this. You have to be true to the character, and you have to think, what would he do? How would he cope with this? And he's not somebody given to, you know, weeping uncontrollably, I don't think. He's somebody that would fight against it. But in that fight, you see his pain. So that's what I was aiming for.
We're going to take a brief moment from our interview to tell you a bit more about today's sponsor. Love Pop isn't just a card. It's an experience in an envelope. It is freaking awesome to get one. We got some, and I am just so jazzed about this company. They have intricate 3D laser-cut paper cards that are designed by naval engineers in our neck of the woods, Boston.
That's right, baby. That's why I love them so much.
And then they're handcrafted and assembled in this Asian art form of slice form kirigami. It is unbelievable, guys. They have over 250 3D cards to choose from. It's honestly, it's like opening a pop-up book, but mm-hmm. It's a card, so you can get them for weddings, birthdays, thank you, celebrations, anything. They've got you covered, and I'm not going to lie, there is a pirate ship for all of you Voyager fans out there who know what I've been talking about.
I love these cards. I'm never going back to getting another regular card ever again. Ever. And the reason why I love them is because they're so personal, and they're amazing. Like, I got a Beatles one. My dad loves the Beatles. He got me into the Beatles. And I gave him one. It was Abbey Road. It was all of them walking across the road. It popped up.
Put in a pop-up.
And he loved it. He has it in his office. I even got one for Reese. That's a dragon.
Because our son loves dragons.
And it's just sitting on his desk, and it's open. It's a card, and he loves it.
So get this, guys. You can shop in your PJs because when you order online, they can even handwrite a message in your card and mail it directly. They are such great quality. They're beautiful. They even just give you a reason to do something awesome for a special person in your life, even if there's no reason, just because they rock.
So please, go get one of these bad boys. I mean, they're not even just a card. They're like a decoration.
Yes.
They're amazing.
And they have a great thing going on right now where you can win with some birthdays. So you're going to head on over to lovepop.com/OutlanderCast. You can enter for a chance to win 50 3D birthday cards.
So remember, guys, it's lovepop.com/OutlanderCast to win 50 birthday cards. Not even birthday cards, just decorations for your house.
It's so true.
Legitimately, I love Love Pop, and they're from Boston. You can't get any better than that. It's my guys over there. All right, you ready to get back to the interview?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
You know, going from the intimate moments of Colm's death to you had so many different extreme experiences, but I wanted to know now about the battle scenes. You know, how did you prepare for those scenes? How did you mentally prepare? And what was going through your mind gearing up for that?
You know, battle scenes are, I mean, they're just a very extreme version of a dance, really. It's how, if you were preparing to do a dance sequence, it's the same as doing a fight sequence. The only difference is that you're using weapons in it. So everything is choreographed. You practice those moves with the people that you're going to be doing the fight with for weeks beforehand so that you know what the other person is going to be doing and what you're going to be doing in relation to them. So you just rehearse it over and over again. And I've done a lot of different types of fights in my career, but a lot of them have been sword related. Less guns, more swords or axes or whatever. And so it's a familiar world for me. I did a lot of it on stage, and I've done a lot of it in film and television. So I'm familiar with the world of it, and I enjoy doing them. They're great fun. They're always a great challenge for the stunt department, because every stunt department wants their fight to be really memorable for a particular reason. So we explored all sorts of different options. And then we set to work. And when you do it on the day, you know what you're doing. You know what part of the dance you are performing. And if there's several people around you, everybody has their bit of the dance. And so just as when you do watch a complicated dance sequence, maybe on stage or on film, you think, how did they do that? And just everybody works really hard to do it.
So, you know, I got to imagine you've done a lot of battle scenes, but did any of them ever require you running down a hill shirtless? Because I got to tell you, you are in the kind of shape that I only wish I could be in. So, like, what did that mean for you? Like, you know, what did you have to did you like, did you only eat like, you know,
celery,
kale for like 3 weeks in order to prepare for that?
No, especially since before The Hobbit, I've done an enormous amount of training I got into ridiculous shape for The Hobbit because it was going to be so physically taxing for 2.5 years as it proved to be. And I tried to maintain that. So yeah, you know, I'm careful enough about what I eat. I don't go mad. I'm not like a monk or anything. But I do, I exercise very regularly and it's really just about, you know, you need to be convincing, again, as the character you're playing, and Dougal McKenzie is a warrior, so he wouldn't have been sitting around eating the equivalent of 18th century pizza. they were people that used their bodies continually. They were always practicing, they were fighting, they were outdoors, so that, I think, needs to be reflected in the physique of the people that are portraying them.
I heard a rumor that you wanted to push this idea of you biting a guy's nose off in battle. Is that true?
Oh, no, we filmed it. We filmed it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we did.
Word.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ira was, it was in the script. Well, in the script, I headbutted him. And I said, listen, you know, he's always headbutting people. It's such a kind of obvious thing to do. So we filmed a sequence where a redcoat is coming at me with his musket and bayonet. And Dougal, being the sort of show-off that he is, puts the sword in the ground and just basically says to him, you know what, I don't even need a sword. I'm still going to kill you. And the guy comes at me. I grab his hand. I grab his musket. I try and stab him with my dirk. He grabs that. So we're in a standoff. And so I said to Ira and the director, I said, listen, he would do anything. Google would do anything to these people. And having done some research on fighting, you know, I know that this sort of thing went on. So he just grabs him, pulls him in, and I just bite his nose off. And so we filmed it. We filmed it when the camera was on me. We paused and we put a little bit of gelatin covered in blood in my mouth. And so we do the, I gnawed it off. And then I just spit the nose out. And I'm so, and then I kill him. And then I turn around and I go through all of the wounded and I just stab every single one of them to make sure they're dead. Mm-hmm. Now in the way that they put it in the episode, that was all truncated. So you didn't get the nose. They thought the nose thing was just too much, which, you know, come on. Of course he would do that.
Of course he would. You're so right.
And they shortened the period of me stabbing the dead bodies so that I get to Lieutenant Foster a bit earlier. But I'm kind of sad that they didn't include the nose butting. It's out there somewhere. They filmed it. They've got it.
So I love it.
You never know. One day it'll come out.
So as we're reflecting here, do you have a specific favorite memory from the set of Outlander that you'd like to share with us?
Oh, gosh. Gosh, there's so many. There really are. I mean, I think that a general feeling of enormous laughter, lots of laughing, especially between me, Sam, Duncan, Stephen Walters, Grant, you know, the Highland group, lots and lots of laughter, lots of joke telling, lots of, you know, Duncan standing behind us in the wedding when Jamie's announcing his full name, Jamie Alexander Malcolm Mackenzie Fraser, and Duncan just adding more and more names during the take so that he was King Kong, he was Tarzan, he was Godzilla, you know, so that, you know, James Alexander, Godzilla, King Kong, Tarzan, Malcolm Mackenzie Fraser. And we couldn't continue. We were just laughing so much. So that was a very long day. And definitely the director got really kind of like, okay, that's enough. That really is enough now. And Duncan just couldn't stop. He just kept doing it very quietly under his breath. So, you know, Optimus Prime, that was another one. Optimus Prime. It was, you know, so that kind of thing. It was a lot of laughter. Yeah.
So, you know, in the past decade or so, you've had some roles in television's biggest shows. I mean, Lost. And you played, by the way, a very convincing Russian diplomat on 24, the Touche. That was amazing. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
You were in Rome, Prison Break, and now you're Outlander and Preacher. I mean, that's a pretty wide breadth of work. So where does Outlander rank in that list for you? Like the experiences, I know they're all different, but where does that rank for you?
Oh, no, huge. It was huge. Yeah. I mean, Outlander was a... For many reasons. I mean, the role, the fact that I got to go back to Scotland and work for a long period, working with a lot of people I already knew, making some great friends. I mean, you make friends when you do a lot of these jobs, but they don't always last. And I've remained friends with all those guys and with Katrina since finishing. So it was a very, very enjoyable, intense experience. Mm-hmm. And I'll be lucky if I get another role that gives me all of those things again. You know, you can do parts that are really enjoyable, but you don't necessarily stay in touch with everybody afterwards. But this was pretty unique. Yeah.
You know, you're talking about different roles, and your slate, of course, seems very full with projects. So are there specific roles that you kind of covet, and what kind of role would you write for yourself if you could?
I mean, I've managed to tick a lot of boxes that I've always wanted to do, like playing a cowboy, being in a Roman epic, you know, doing the kind of Lord of the Rings thing, you know. So those were definite ambitions that I had, and I think, you know, I'd like to do more comedy. I don't get the opportunity to do that very much, and on stage, I've always wanted to play Macbeth. And I really hope that one day I will. And so those kind of things. But other than that, really, it's just whatever whatever presents itself at the time. And a lot of these things come out completely from left field. I never imagined doing a part like Dougal. I didn't imagine that world being explored in the way that it was. So the great thing about the business is that on the one hand, yes, it is, you know, you never quite know what's happening in the future, but that's also a very exciting thing. So there are parts out there that I still have yet to play that will be really amazing for me, hopefully, and very surprising and challenging. And I like challenges. I like doing things that test me and push me. So those kind of things. I did a one-man show once, and that was a huge challenge. And one that was very, very difficult, but I'm so glad I did it. So, challenges. Anything that gives me a physical or performance-related challenge.
You know, just from me being a fan of yours, I just want to say that if you could find a way to nose yourself into the Marvel Universe, I think that would be amazing. I think you would are a perfect fit. Just that, but well, that's just one man's opinion.
You never know.
So are you trying to tell me that there's something brewing there? You never know. I'm just, you know, you never know.
No. I'm not saying nothing. No.
All doors are open is what you're saying.
Nothing. Yes, exactly.
Thank you again so much, Graham, for coming on and chatting with Blake and I and for letting the listeners of OutlanderCast get to hear all these great stories. Where can our listeners find you if they want to stay in touch with you and learn about your upcoming projects?
Well, they can reach me through Twitter, Graham McTavish. They can reach me on Instagram, also Graham McTavish, and my official Facebook page, also Graham McTavish. Nice and easy, nothing too complicated. So, yeah, that's where you'll find any news and any way of wanting to keep in touch with me.
So there you have it. That wraps up our interview with Graham McTavish. What a wonderful guy. Just really kind and easygoing. And actually, he did this interview while he was waiting for a plane. So we apologize that it was a little short. There were so many more questions that, of course, we would have loved to ask him. He was amazing and kind. And
I can't believe he just, I mean, like, he's in the airport. He's like, one of the things that I edited out, he's like, somebody was trying to tell him, like, all right, get on the plane, buddy. He's like, yeah. Okay, hold on one second.
He's like, phone's about to die, and we're like, we got this.
Don't worry about it, buddy.
The magic of the podcasting, still let it go. So, Graham, if you're listening to this, thank you. We know that you are juggling, and for everyone else, we hope you enjoyed it. Gave you a little bit of insight, a little bit of the humor. Right. I mean, it sounds like, from everyone that we hear, just such a great group. I wish I could have just been a fly on the wall while they were filming Outlander, but I love that he would just thought this was a great experience to add to his several other amazing experiences.
Right. You know what the funny thing is, too? He was in New Zealand at the time, and we're here, obviously, on the east coast of the United States, in Rhode Island. And all I wanted to do was just make Back to the Future jokes. I just wanted to say, like, did you get 1.21 gigawatts? Was it, you know, going to 88 miles per hour? I just wanted to, like, you know, just talk to him because he was in the future, technically.
Gigawatts? I thought it was gigawatts.
Gigawatts. You know what? Who knows?
But yes, so just had a great time. And the Gonlander tradition now continues.
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Sadly, people keep dying in Outlander, so we're just going to keep bringing you some Gonlanders.
Another thing that I really loved about Graham, too, was that I kind of expected him to have that same voice and the same accent that he had as Dougal McKenzie, but it's completely opposite. He's like this really well-spoken, very kind, very generous guy.
You were expecting that you were going to interview Dougal.
I really was. And again, my new love of Dougal McKenzie kind of he colored my experience a little bit here. I was a little intimidated.
That's
I'm
okay.
Not going to lie. The man's in great shape. He could probably reach through the phone and grab my neck and,
see, I just
and
was,
ring it.
Right before interviewing him, I was geeking out about the pictures of him in The Hobbit. And I was like,
I know.
I can't believe I didn't notice it was him. So you had the frightening Dougal McKenzie in your mind, and I was looking at a dwarf. So.
Wow. Well, I don't think he'd be too happy with us right now.
Why not? No, I'm saying that he does an extraordinary job, that he was able to put fear in you.
That's true.
And then here I was being like, wow,
he's a dwarf
climbing that mountain. So determined. So way to go, Graham. You have to very, very happy fans and all of our listeners. So thank you if you are listening. And thanks, listeners, for listening to the Gunlander interviews.
All right, you ready to close out the show, my darling?
You bet.
All right, let's do it.
If this is your first Outlander Cast episode, I want you to head on over to outlandercast.com and check out all of our previous episodes. We've been able to interview other Gonlanders, hashtag Gonlander, RIP, sadly missed, as well as other people. And, you know, season three is coming. It's like winter is coming, but season three is coming. It is coming so quickly. So I want to make sure that you are subscribed in your podcast app. I want you to keep your eyes on our Facebook page, our Instagram page. And better yet, come and join our clan. The Outlander Cast Clan Gathering is the best exclusive Facebook community for all Outlander fans, whether you are a show watcher or a book reader or both. Everyone is welcome. It is kind. It is loving. It is exciting. It is thrilling. And you are going to make friends from around the world.
I've heard many people say it's literally the best group for Outlander they've ever been in. And I know I'm biased. I know that Mary and I created it. I know that it's our little baby, but I'm very proud of it. And I do want you to join and get in on this amazing conversation. Another thing that I want you to do is look out for the Outlander Cast blog, because we keep up with all the news, all the trailers, all that stuff. Anything Outlander related, it is on the blog.
We have an extraordinary staff from around the world bringing you blog posts every single week.
And
every single week.
Another thing you should look out for on the blog, too, is the fact that we have 13 personal questions with Graham McTavish that were not included in on this podcast. That's only available exclusively on the blog. So you're going to want to check that out as well as soon as you can.
And Blake, if people are like, what? Blake is reading the books?
Yes, yes.
How did they get in on that?
I'm only reading the book. I'm reading
Outlander,
the book. That is it. And I'm doing that because the patrons for our Patreon account made that possible. They donated enough money for us where I was able to read the book and get an experience. And if you want to hear my thoughts on the book in a chapter by chapter analysis, I just did the Garrison Commander. I'm very proud of it. It was 36 minutes long, that episode. I couldn't believe it. Usually they're only about 15, but because I loved that chapter so much, it was crazy. If you want to hear my thoughts, go to patreon.com and listen to my chapter by chapter analysis by becoming a patron of as little as $2 a month.
It's patreon.com/outlandercast. Think of it as you do when you are donating to something like your local PBS station or radio station.
Thanks to supporters like you.
Right?
Where's Laura Linney when we need her?
It really is. It's thanks to supporters like you, and this is just a little way that we can give back by having Blake's chapter by chapter analysis. So until next time, folks, I'm Mary Larson.
My name is Blake.
And you've been listening to Outlander Cast. And our screaming kids in the background.
We're not being negligent parents, I promise.
Sesame Street must be over.
All right, let's close it out.